This recording has been released into the public domain by the Bonson Institute, where we aim to bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ.
The first reason for the shifting of the positions is the advent since the 1930s of the tyrannical powers like Hitler, Mussolini. Okay, Christian thinkers have...
Yes, sir.
When you talk about the territorial integration between states and church, could you give out define the most perspective? I was a little confused here. As from the church perspective out, or from the governmental institution, or where you're pushing the glove up over the top. I don't know if I'm making that stuff clear.
Well, I'm not understanding your question. Try it again.
Okay, in other words, what I'm asking, I was trying to understand the differentiation between the territorial control or realm of the church versus the state. Mm-hmm. And from whose perspective?
Okay, well, I was speaking from a common Christian perspective there. I think that all Christians would agree that the church is not a territorial institution, whereas the state is. The church is not defined by a locality. As well, once you get out of the United States, you can't possibly be in the church. Okay, but once you get outside the United States, you can't possibly be in the United States. Okay?
I would have another observation, too, in that, you know, the Pope has already spoken out against the liberation theologians in Latin America.
Yeah.
And perhaps he perceives them getting far too much involved with a Marxian view. And he's not liking that, so he's across the board making it a rule. America too, in the United States.
Yeah, that may be.
Whenever you define the three different areas of evangelicals that divide up it.
Yeah. One way of breaking up, you know, the pigeonholes.
And you put yourself in the transformational category.
No.
You don't?
No. As much as God's grace is in me, operative, I hope to be in all three of them. So I would hope that my devotional life is one that pleases to God, that my doctrine is pure, and that my transformational effect is powerful. I hope.
The thrust of the lecture is transformational stuff.
this whole course is dealing with transformational issues. What are we as Christians doing with salt of the earth and the light of the world in politics? But by that, I do not mean to suggest that this course, you see, is really a lot more important than systematic theology, or a lot more important than a series on prayer that you may be receiving in your local church. What I'm saying is that all three of these areas are foci, have their proper place, and should be kept, you know, in the total package of our Christian experience. However, the reason a lot of people are fearful of a course like this or discussions such as we're going to be getting into is because of the categorization of Christians in this way, and therefore they either think, well, what we're doing is just really super, you know, the rest are really kind of lagging behind us in their Christian growth and sanctification, or, as a matter of fact, we're really getting pulled off to the side instead of the central issues of piety and doctrine. Okay, all I was suggesting there is there are these three different emphases in the Christian experience that are divided up, and that division in the minds of many people leads them to be skeptical of transformational matters. Okay, but as a matter of fact, this whole course is a transformational course in its orientation, that's right. And that doesn't mean, of course, that you have to be transformational in the same way that I am. I mean, we can come to different conclusions, but that's the banner under which I'm flying. Yeah.
Does the Bible share an optimism about that?
Well, now that's a very important eschatological question. And as I see it, if I were a premillennialist of the most pessimistic stripe, I'm not saying all are just as pessimistic, but if I was just as pessimistic as one could be about what we can expect to happen in our culture, I would still have to ask myself what ought to be happening in our culture and what should I be working to see happen. Okay, I may not think it's going to. I may think that we may be living in the last days. I may think the rapture is right around the corner. But until the day Jesus raptures me from this earth, I should be working for civil governments that are righteous. And so we would still have to raise the very same questions that we're going to.
Now, in all honesty, so you don't think I'm evading the question, I am optimistic. I don't believe this is the late great planet Earth, and I don't think Satan's alive and well here. I think he's doomed. I think Christ in his resurrection put the chains on him, and that right now he's spoiling his house. I also think that the growth of the kingdom, like mustard seed and corn and all the rest, is Jesus' sin. You know, it's ups and downs, there's slow periods, fast periods, and sadly enough, in our own century, we're not living in a very enthusiastic or optimistic age. But if you take the long-term vision, or if you see the wider scope, in a biblical perspective, I would be a post-millennialist, I suppose, in the Puritan sense, not in the liberal sense of the social gospel. But that, I really don't think that will affect the normative issues that we're going to be talking about in this course. Again, we should all agree that homosexuality is not a civil right. I mean, if that's the right attitude, we should all agree to it. However, some of us might think all of our work is going to be for nothing, although we should be working as best we can. And some of us may feel that, as a matter of fact, God will honor that effort and perhaps preserve our culture if we're faithful.
When you sit down, some of the things you mentioned in terms of God's following, particularly in reference to the Matthew passage you mentioned, the actual doesn't mean. Can you further elaborate? I think it's key to some of the points you bring out.
Further elaborate on the
sovereignty of God's sovereignty, and where it is. Obviously, the other was in terms of the Christ, the work of Christ, the word of Christ. Mm-hmm. So, how would God's sovereignty speak to the political arena in terms of Christian affiliation?
Okay, why don't you prime the punter? Give me one detailed question that falls under the rubric you're talking about, and then I'll try to say a little bit more about it.
The Christian making a split between the Democrat and Republican Party.
And how does the sovereignty of God relate to that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
or the whole notion of party politics. We're the ones that involve themselves in it as a believer, etc.
Okay, I see the nature of the question you have in mind, and these are excellent questions. My feeling is, if you don't mind, that we're going to be coming to that in due course, and there may be some things I'll be saying by way of preparation that would be better that we wait on that. I mean, I could jump right into that, and I think we'd probably spend the rest of the hour on that. We're going to be coming to that, the whole question of power politics and so forth, tomorrow night, and certain philosophies of the state. But you hold me to that. And when we get to that, if I'm not scratching where you are, and I'm not getting to those questions, just renew the question, okay? Because I don't want to ignore it, but I do think there might be a more appropriate place to answer it. Okay, let me continue by looking then at what the proper function of the state is. Christian thinkers have believed that a certain proper function belongs to the nature of the state, and it's just there that our disagreements begin. While we all hold that the proper function of the state is set by God, we disagree as to what the function of the state is. And if we dig down real deep, I think we'll find three basic views on this matter which have been defended and articulated by Christian thinkers in the 20th century. These are also, I believe, the views which are most alive as patterns and options in the Christian community as a whole. Of course, most of us probably don't have any clear views on the proper function of the state. Either that, or we have inconsistent views on the matter. That's why we're having a course like this. I mean, we're trying to find out just exactly what's going on as we think through things and try to clean up our act. But as a background, I think, to these three views that I want to bring to you, it would be convenient to have before us the medieval, traditional, Catholic view of Thomas Aquinas. For it turns out that all three contemporary views have been carved out in opposition to the main features of the traditional Catholic view. So I'm going to look at traditional Thomism, and then I'm going to be looking at the three views that I have in mind in answering the question, what is the proper function of the state? Now, Aquinas in his writings repeatedly describes man as a social and political animal. What he had in mind by that was, first, that existence in society is necessary if man's created nature is to find fulfillment. In that way, man is a social creature, destined more than other animals to live in community, as Aquinas says. Secondly, Aquinas argued that no society can exist unless there is some government within that society, unless, that is, someone has a care for the common good of society and the others render to him obedience. In this way, man is by nature a political creature. Okay? Man is by nature social. Man is by nature political. Within every body politic, there is a whole fabric of institutions. A quietest spot of the state is part of such a fabric as one of the institutions of the body politic. Now, to explain which part, we must first distinguish between religious matters and secular matters. This is what I like to do, but I mean, I want to be fair to St. Thomas, and that's what he said we had to do. In Aquinas' view, the concern of the state is wholly with secular matters. Religious matters belong within the competence of the church. The state is that one among all the institutions in the body politic dealing with secular matters, which is the topmost. Many deal with secular matters, but the state deals with secular matters as the topmost institution. It is the one having supreme authority. With the possible exception of the family, all the others are, so far as authority is concerned, subordinate to the state. The proper function of this topmost part of the entire institutional fabric is to care for the secular common good. That is, for the secular good of the body politic as a whole. And it does this in part by ordering those other social institutions which are properly subordinate to it. Okay, so the state orders all the social institutions in such a way that the good of the whole, the good of the body politic, will be served. Now, viewed from the vantage point that we have in the 20th century, I think the most striking feature of that which I've outlined in the Thomistic view is that it sets so few limits to totalitarian tendencies in our state. Aquinas does, of course, say that the proper function of the state is limited to secular matters. And he does say that within the domain of the secular, the proper function of the state is limited to the common good of the body politic. Yet within the domain of the secular common good, the state may properly act wherever it deems such action conducive to the common good. In many circumstances, it may well be bad policy for the state itself to make medical decisions, educational decisions, economic decisions, and so forth. But if it did so, it would not, by virtue of so doing, be a malformed state. Let me put it to you very directly. If the state, in Thomas's view, if the state were to make a decision as to what operation you should have, it would not be a malformed state. There would be nothing you see out of order in the state making that kind of decision. Now, the state might recognize that it's not the most competent agency on earth to make that decision. But if the state decides to make medical decisions, that's its business. If it decides it's in the common good, it can make that decision.
Yes, yeah. Just one quick question then. Did he have any way in which the state should decide what's the common good, or did they make up their own minds in that? Are they to base that upon? I just don't know enough study process to answer the point I asked.
Yeah, Aquinas.
Do you think the church should guide the state in that, or is it the state's decision?
No, natural morality is determined by natural reason.
Okay.
And the church has no distinctive contribution to make. Natural reason,
right. Okay.
What is common,
that's
reason
fallen.
Among men.
That's not fallen in other words than man.
Well, that's right. It's not fallen in one sense, although it's been tainted by the fall. I mean, there is a drag, our bodies now. Well, I don't want to get into Thomistic anthropology.
No,
there is some hindrance due to sin, but it's not the kind of hindrance that evangelical thought is there. Okay, a totalitarian state, of course, is not necessarily an evil state. Its laws may be good laws, and its administration may be just. Yet biblical reflection and 20th century experience have sufficed to convince most contemporary political thinkers that a state so near totalitarian as Aquinas' theory would allow is inherently malformed. Okay, accordingly, contemporary Christian political theories can all be viewed as forged in opposition to the extremely comprehensive scope which the Thomistic theory assigns to the state's proper function. Okay, let me summarize what I've been saying. Thomas gives the state free rein. He opens the door to the state doing all sorts of things that we think would be out of order if the state gives them today. So the three views, the three 20th century Christian views of the proper function of the state I'm going to be looking at, can be viewed as forged over against that you see voracious view of its fate, just how it just overcomes everything if it should want to do so. All the views we're going to be looking at have tried to formulate limits structurally comparable to those which Aquinas set with respect to religious matters to the proper function of the state. Of course, all have gone along with Aquinas in saying that the proper function of the state is limited to the common good of the body politic. That is already an extremely important limitation. And all have gone along with Aquinas in ascribing autonomy within its own domain to the church. But all have also attempted to go well beyond this and form a theory in which the proper function of the state is confined to some definite domain within the common good. I'm answering your question here. That's why I want to emphasize that. These three views are making an attempt to define the common good now, going beyond Aquinas, and in so defining it, thereby limiting the state so that it can't become so totalitarian that it makes medical decisions, educational, economic decisions, and all the rest. Okay, I'm going to... Any questions? It's all background. This is, I've given you the foil. Now I'm going to show three attempts to deal with that foil. I'll begin with the most comprehensive of the contemporary theories, and that's the theory that says the proper function of the state is legal regulation and welfare. Legal regulation and welfare. This view is most characteristically found among Roman Catholics and liberal Protestants. And this is the view to which the Catholic scholar Jacques Maritain gravitates. And as I speak, I'm going to be really analyzing Maritain's book, Man and the State, published in 1951. Jacques Maritain, Man and the State. Jacques Maritain, Man and the State, 1951. Okay, he's just representative of this view, and all sorts of liberal Protestants and Roman Catholics maintain basically the same outlook. Maritain vigorously argues the point that a well-ordered body politic will not be a collection of individuals having just one important institution, the state. Rather, it will to a high degree be what he calls pluralistic society. His own words describe well what he has in mind. Quote, the body politic contains in its superior unity a multiplicity of particular societies which proceed from the free initiative of citizens and should be as autonomous as possible. Such is the element of pluralism inherent in every truly political society. Family, economic, cultural, educational, religious life matter as much as does political life to the very existence and prosperity of a body politic. Every kind of law, from the spontaneous, unformulated group regulation to customary law, and to law in the full sense of the term, that is, legal declarations from the Parliament or the Congress, all these different kinds of law, every kind of law contributes to the vital order of political society. Finally, the public welfare and the general order of law are essential parts of the common good of the body politic. But this common good has far larger and richer, more concretely, human implications. End of quote. In short, a well-ordered body politic will have within it a large number of institutions, each of which has its own distinct domain of proper functioning. Okay. You want to get a good body? You better have a good heart and liver and lungs and stomach and all the rest. All these things, you see, have to work together in a good body. And in a good body politic, you have to have the same sort of thing. You should have good cultural institutions, educational institutions, economic institutions, religious institutions, all functioning in a harmonious way. Now, where is the state in this array of institutions? What is its proper function? Maritain's answer seems to be that the state has a threefold proper function. For one thing, it is the state's proper function to regulate the activities of the members of the body politic, both individuals and societies, by a system of law based on justice and good order. First, regulate by means of good law.
This recording has been released into the public domain by the Bonson Institute. Duplication, sharing, and distribution is encouraged. For more information about the life and ministry of Dr. Greg L. Bonson, visit our website, bonsoninstitute.com, where we aim to bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ.